You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Coming up in 5 minutes, we'll speak with Joe Christofek as we get you ready for the Preakness. An interesting story from Pimlico coming out of there as well. So we will get to that here in a few minutes. Also, coming up, Ty Graffinini, 215. We just continue to talk a little college baseball. Also, Manny Pappas has joined us from UNO. Brian Johnson from the Colonels just got done with him. Matt Reiser at the top of last hour. We spoke to the head coach of Southeastern as, again, a lot of the college baseball series starting today. I think pretty much everyone is starting their final series today. Chris Blair, voice of the LC Tigers, 12:30. We had him on to chat a little bit about it as well. We talked about Anthony Davis right there at the end of the hour being named the finalist for the MVP award in the NBA. James Harden and LeBron James, the other two finalists. Also, AD, a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. And Joel Embiid and Rudy Gobert also being able to do that as well. Some of the other things that we'll have some fun with, or I guess looking at some of the other awards that are possible. In case you're wondering, yeah, Coach of the Year, Dwayne Casey, who got fired by Toronto. Up for Coach of the Year, but was fired, if that makes any sense. Quinn Snyder of the Jazz, Brad Stevens of the Celtics, Most Improved Player, Sixth Man of the Year. We'll get into some of that as well as Joe's joined us now. Joe Christofek, our racing analyst, getting ready for the second jewel of the Triple Crown. Joe, how are you this afternoon, man?
I'm good, man. I thought Derby was a mess, but it looks like you're going to have to bring your raincoat, your umbrella, and some hot chocolate for Baltimore because the forecast doesn't look great, but the race is shaping up pretty good.
At Joey Decay Racing is the way to follow you over on Twitter. Charlie Rick's joining us here as well, as we'll talk a little bit about this. But before we get into the race, an interesting story I saw in the Advocate this week. Could this be the last time that we see racing at that particular track with the Preakness? Could it move next year?
Yeah, that probably isn't a great question for me necessarily. I don't know what the inner workings are, but I've been reading the same stuff that you have, and they've been talking about that for a few years now. No matter how many renovations they do to Pimlico, you know, it's not the greatest venue necessarily to hold the second jewel of the Triple Crown, and that organization has some options. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that race moving forward. It's a jewel in that city. I would hate to see it moved away from Baltimore with the tradition, et cetera, et cetera. But right. Whatever makes business sense is what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's just interesting to bring it up because you never really hear of, like, places, I guess, moving and things of that nature. So it just struck me when I saw that yesterday reading that around there. But as far as the race goes, Charlie, you were bringing up the fact that it's not as full of field as the Kentucky Derby, a much smaller field right now.
Yeah, eight horses. And Joe, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, hey, I'm good. All's well.
Well, you know, we don't like to see short fields in these Triple Crown races. Of course, Preakness is always the shortest of the three. Mainly from a better standpoint, it's you're trying to figure out how to make some money with the race, especially when you have a 1-2 morning line favorite, right, Joe?
I mean, I've never understood this whole 2 weeks after the Derby running the second leg of the Triple Crown when you've got horses that just ran the hardest race of their life at a mile and a quarter, coming back on 2 weeks rest, and then several new shooters that are probably scared off by the fact that the Derby winner looks like he could potentially win the Triple Crown. So you get a smaller field. You don't get nearly as good a betting race as you do in the Kentucky Derby or even the Belmont. So by far, to me, it's the least interesting of the three and the least bettable. I mean, you've had, you know, favorites winning, you know, a real strong percentage of this of these races. 10 of the last 20 have been won by the Derby winner, who's had a chance to go on to the Triple Crown, which American Pharoah did eventually complete recently. So, you know, if you're going to have an odds-on favorite in Justify, a very strong second choice in Good Magic. And then, you know, Lone Sailor, who had a really tough trip in the Kentucky Derby, who I'm sure you guys are going to want to talk about. I think he'll be the third choice along with Quip. But you've got a handful of horses in here that, you know, I'd be absolutely shocked if they ran in the top three.
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe, speaking with Joe Christofek, horse racing analyst at Joey Decay Racing, is the way to follow him over on Twitter. That I go back and recall that Kentucky Derby, and you mentioned maybe the conditions might be similar, but to me, Justify just really, I think I texted you, Charlie, right when it happened. I said, he made that look easy. I mean, in the slop and in that conditions in the rain. Well, was that something that stood out to you, how strong that horse sort of looked to the rest of the field, in which you told us was as strong a field that you've seen in a long, long time at the Derby?
Yeah, I mean, going into the first turn, he was never a loser. He broke great. He got a perfect trip outside of a horse that you knew was going to show speed and come back. He took over. He was challenged briefly by Good Magic at the top of the stretch and disposed of him. It was a really good race, but, I mean, it went really fast early, 45 and change for a mile and a quarter race, and finished up in 204, which means it went the last six furlongs, or he did, in 118. So there's some reason to believe that there's maybe some vulnerability. Came out of the race with a little bit of a hoof bruise. This is going to be his fifth start since the middle of March. He's never overcome any kind of adversity. He's had things all his own way in all of his races. That being said, he's going to be 1-5 or 2-5, and deservedly so, because he's good, and I'm not sure that the competition he's facing is.
Joe, as you look at the form for these horses, I'm seeing something interesting. I want to get your take on it. Trainer D. Wayne Lucas, one of the greatest of all time, no doubt. He has two horses in this race, number 3, Sporting Chance, number 8, Bravazo. I'm thinking there has to be some strategy here. Now, Sporting Chance has to be pressing the front end. That's the only chance he has to win this race. Bravazo, the Risen Star winner here at the Fairgrounds, disappointing Louisiana Derby. But D-Wayne Lucas has a way of pacing these horses in their training and getting them to peak at the right time. Bravazo showed that he can rate in that Kentucky Derby. He was in 11th place, got mud in his face for about a mile, and still finished nicely with a nice close. Maybe they found out Bravazo can rate and come off the pace. Do you see maybe D-Wayne Lucas sending Sporting Chance to the front, put a little pressure on that pace, and he also made a jockey change on Bravazo with Luis Saez, who's a very strong jockey and knows how to finish with the horse. Do you see maybe coming down the stretch, Bravazo is gaining on the leaders?
I can see that scenario. I mean, Lucas has won the Preakness 6 times, and mm-hmm. not always with, you know, one of the favorites. He did it 3 years ago. He won with a 13-1 shot. There's some speed in here. You've got Quip, who almost has to go from the rail. You mentioned Sporting Chance. He might go. Diamond King, the local horse, probably going to go. Tenfold has some speed. Justify has some speed. So it could set up for a horse at least to pick up some pieces late, whether that's Bravazo or Lone Sailor making up ground at the end of the race. I think that's got to be the strategy, is just hope for a fast pace, hope your horse handles the track, and pick up as many of them as you can. And I certainly think Bravazo outperformed his odds in the Kentucky Derby. He ran a lot better than a lot of people thought he would. And now there might be another step forward in him.
As a racing fan, I think we all want Justify to win this race. We'd love to see another Triple right. Crown opportunity. Justify is a beast. They say he weighs in at about 1,280 pounds, and he's a huge horse. So it's his Triple Crown to lose, I believe, come Saturday. Morning line 1-2. The best odds we're going to see on this horse is maybe 3-5. So how do we play Justify to make any money in this race? Where do we go with this bet?
Yeah, I guess it depends on your bankroll and what you're trying to accomplish. But if you like Justify, then I think you got to try to play some cold exactas, you know, figure out who you like second, play a stronger exacta. Obviously, the Justify Good Magic exacta isn't going to pay anything, you know, but if you really like it and bet $20 on a Justify Good Magic Exacta that pays $7, then you get back $70, and that's the logical result. If you like Lone Sailor or you like Bravazo, you know, and you like Justify, then maybe you play a strong Exacta with Justify on top of one or both of those horses. Maybe mess around a little bit for third in the trifecta. Hmm. You know, if you like Justify, it's going to be hard to make money without betting money.
There you go. And I guess, Joe, you mentioned it several times. Lone Sail, obviously, the local ties here, the Benson's horse. A chance to place, and would that be a solid effort for them?
I think he's got a great shot to you know, certainly run in the money. I think he's got a marginal upset chance. In the Derby, he broke slowly. He was absolutely blocked. He did have some run, wound up finishing a willing eighth, but, you know, probably could have finished better than that with a better trip. I mentioned earlier that the final six furlongs of the race were run in 1:18, which doesn't even seem possible in horse racing at that level. If it's a wet track but it's drying out, you know, we know the Justify will run well over a sloppy racetrack, you know, that doesn't have a lot of cushion to it. But if it's a drying out racetrack that can be a little bit more funky in nature, some horses don't handle that. Maybe Lone Sailor could. I think he's going to run a big race. I think Tom Amos is doing the right thing and running him after he didn't have a fair shot in the Derby. Smaller field, a lot less traffic to negotiate for a horse who's certainly going to be running from off the pace.
Joe Christofek, thank you for your time this afternoon at Joey Decay Racing's, the way to follow over on Twitter. One of the best horse racing analysts around. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate your time, man.
And real quick, publicly, I'm taking Good Magic, so I'm looking for the upset.
There you go. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Cheers, guys. Always a pleasure.
For sure.
Thanks, Joe.
You know, it's interesting you say Good Magic. Again, the feel was so strong in the Derby. It just, again, Justify just kind of looks so different. But in the question that I started out with him, I pulled it up here, the article I saw yesterday, because you never really think of venues as an issue or things of that nature. You've obviously been to Churchill Downs and seen where the Derby is. But when you see numbers like $300 to $500 million in renovation, I only bring that up because Saints fans here have been listening to me talk about a year and a half, and now the team commissioned the study to see what they can do with the dome. That's that kind of numbers, $300 to $500 million. You know, to lop off the roof of the dome and it make extensive. So when I hear $300 to $500 million for a racetrack, I mean, because they're talking about Laurel Park, same owner. Laurel Park's a newer track. It's in the same area and vicinity, and it kind of looks like maybe they want to move there. I'm just saying, when I hear $300 to $500 million, I mean, that's basically just starting from the ground up, huh, at a racetrack?
Yeah, they've talked about moving it from Pimlico for a few years now, and of course, the history, you want to keep it there. But if they run the same distance, they move it to Laurel, same time of the year. I don't see a big deal with that. The track surfaces are similar. But, you know, Joe mentioned Good Magic. You look at horse races, and you have one that wins the race. Justify won that Kentucky Derby. But the horse that maybe ran the best race doesn't always win. And Good Magic maybe ran the best race in that Kentucky Derby. And what I mean by that is he had to come off the pace a little bit. He got a little dirt in his face. Justify didn't have one drop of mud on him. And that track was tough for these horses to get a grip on it. So coming off the pace was very, very tough to do. Mm-hmm. So Good Magic stayed back and just couldn't quite grab that surface to catch him. But he ran a very good race. We don't know what the track conditions are going to be. There is rain in the forecast. But I look for Good Magic to run a good race, and I know what he's going to do. He's going to stay right behind Justify, not let him get as far ahead as he did in the Derby. And if he stays close, this could be a two-horse race.
It's interesting to hear Joe say that. He thinks Lone Sailor can get in there and place. How big would it be, even if you got a third? I asked you this morning. If Lone Sailor got third, how big is that?
I mean, he's still going to win, you know, $600,000 or something like that. But I think Tom Amos put Lone Sailor in this race. I think he has a better chance to win the Preakness than he does the Belmont.
To win it?
Yes.
Wow, I'm talking placing.
Well, Tom Amos isn't going to run Lone Sailor unless he thinks he has a chance.
Really?
Okay, that's a fact. That's the way Tom Amos is as a trainer. I think he may not even run in the Belmont. I think Lone Sailor has shown that he can close. I think you know, people have this misconception. The longer the race is, that closers will have a better chance. That's not necessarily true. What closers need, some of them, a lot of them, is a fast pace they can run into. This little shorter distance for the Preakness, well, it's going to give you some fast fractions. There's three or four speed horses in this race. And Tom Amos knows that Lone Sailor, as Joe said, can come near the end of this race, pick up some pieces, and who knows, maybe get a win. I don't see Lone Sailor doing very well in a Belmont, only because it's a mile and a half. You're not going to get the fractions. And I don't know if he has the tactical speed. But, yeah, Tom Amos is going to give Lone Sailor his best chance to win at least one jewel of the Triple Crown, and this is it.
Is it hard to watch these races and start thinking of, because to me, I want to see Justify win. I'd like Lone Sailor to be great. Sure. It was a great story. It's just like, I want to see another triple because it's so hard. And then if they win that second one, we've seen horses come up short and even have some tragedy in the third one.
Let me tell you, the best horses that are in that Kentucky Derby are not in this Preakness, and that's because they want to go after Justify and the Belmont. They're going to get some fresh legs for that Belmont. And Justify,
you and I talked about this if tough. That's fair or not.
Well, it's fair because they ran in the Kentucky Derby. Yeah, right. Should you run in all three? I don't know about that. This is tough. Bob Baffert, if he had not won this Kentucky Derby, may not even have Justify in this race. But he has a Triple Crown possibility. He has to run. It's almost mandated. Right. So there he is. But come Belmont, there's going to be a bunch of fresh horses, and Justify is going to have his hands full. That's why we've only had four in the last 50, right. 60 years
to
win this Triple
Crown. I
would
say Pharaoh had to, like, go against some horses that didn't run the middle one and then, the Preakness and then did that. Because that was a storyline. I remember you telling me, hey, he has to face some horses that are out there just to try to beat him.
You know, Justify reminds me of American Pharaoh quite a bit and their stature. They're big horses. They both can run on the front of the pack.
Right.
And they can win that way. They both have the speed and they have the stamina. And for a big horse like Justify, this 1,280 pounds, to have that kind of speed, he is a beast. And he's going to be tough to beat on Saturday, no doubt. But the Belmont is going to be the race where hopefully we have a good field of 14, maybe 16 horses that will take it on. Now you're talking about some good betting racing there in the Belmont. This one here, now listen, we say 3-5 would be the best odds for Justify. 3-5, just to give you the absolute numbers and dollars. That if a $2 bet, you're going to collect $3.20. So that, it's like Joe said, okay, let's find someone to box him in an exact a trifecta. Box Justify with two or three other horses in an exacta. And then hopefully, if your big payoff's going to come if Justify runs third, okay, or out of the money and those other two come in, you could be talking about $150 exacta payout.
We'll have your partner in crime when we do the Louisiana Derby. Bernie Halperin will be on tomorrow, 12:30 as well. We always love to have both of them on, Joe and Bernie on, and they were right on the money on Kentucky Derby. And so you heard how Joe would play it. We'll hear how Bernie's going to play it. He's always very good at taking that $1 and making you somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody sent me a screenshot of a ticket at the Kentucky Derby based off of what Bernie said. Made 30 bucks. There you go.
Hit the exact. I played the same horse as Bernie did.
Exactly right. So awesome. Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate you sitting in. When we come back, we will hear from Todd Graffanini, voice of the Tulane Green Wave. They start their final series of the regular season against UCF. Then at the bottom of the hour, head coach Kenny Farrell, who's just walked in. He's got a nice game coming up here on Saturday with the Jesters. We'll talk a little football with him coming up. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. Favorite part so far during that break. I don't know if Joey could listen. He was trying to get the graph on. Coach Kenny Farrow having a little go at the intern's hair.
Is it nice?
Interesting hair, right?
Interesting is a good word.
Yeah, there you go. We'll speak with Coach here at the bottom of the hour and get a little more on that. As interesting is a good word, but of course it is time to bring him on. His official music. The Graph, the voice of the Tulane Green Wave, Ty Graffanini. How are you there? How are you?
I am spectacular, Goosey. How are you?
I'm doing good. You enjoyed your early morning today, your early morning over there in Orlando.
I did. One of my very best friends in the entire world, a guy I went to high school with, Chris Budendorf, I'm not ashamed to say his name on the radio. It was his birthday today. And we spent the morning out at the Ocean Course at Hammock Beach in Palm Harbor, Florida. It was pretty phenomenal, Gus.
Nice.
I have to admit.
We're kind of dehydrating over here with the heat, and you know, we had to get ready for the show, but hey, you know what?
Well,
I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
As we say in the business, Gus, that's a your problem.
That's exactly right.
I'm actually preparing to get on the bus, and hopefully we're going to have baseball tonight. The weather here isn't all that great with that disturbance in the Gulf. Now, fortunately for me and Chris today, we didn't get any rain out on the Atlantic side of Florida. But in the middle and kind of towards the Gulf, it's been very, very hit or miss all day long. And so the teams actually practiced last night at UCF in the cages, not able to get out on the field. The tarp's been on the field for a couple of days now. The outfield is a quagmire. So we're just going to have to see what happens tonight. The goal, obviously, Gus, is to get three games in, though we cannot play a game after Saturday night. It's all got to be finished by Saturday because, of course, our tournament starts in Clearwater a couple hours to our west on Tuesday. So everybody's got to be finished conference play by Saturday night.
We talked with some of the teams from the Southland Conference, obviously Coach Reiser as well, and also you know, the fact that he's hosting Houston and how good, and he mentioned that the American Conference, number three in the country, Todd, probably to a lot of people's surprise listening right now, RPI-wise, but that's something that you've seen all year.
Yeah, it's been a really, really good year for the league, Gus. And, you know, you build RPI. Obviously, you're playing your schedule within the conference, but you build RPI by really, really good non-conference schedules. And not only do you have to build those conference or those non-conference schedules that way, you got to win those games. No, it doesn't do you any good if you're playing good teams and you don't win. So that's really been the combination this year for the league. You know, if you look at Tulane, though, our record against the teams that we played non-conference wasn't as good as we would have hoped, but this was probably as challenging a non-conference schedule as I've seen in at least 10 to 15 years here. So, but we weren't the only teams that did that, and it's really paid off. And that might, you know, get Houston in because, look, Houston, despite them being the number one seed and, you know, any loss by East Carolina this weekend up in Stores is going to give Houston the outright championship. I still don't think Houston is a virtual lock to get into a regional despite winning this conference. It's been a very interesting season for them. And, of course, Tulane beat Houston 2 out of 3 about a month ago in a very interesting series. But I think Houston, you know, that's a big weekend that they've got coming up against Southeastern. I know you talked to Coach Reiser. I'm pretty sure they're playing two games. They're not playing three.
Just two games.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Thursday,
yeah,
Friday.
So, yeah, and then they're gonna get on the plane and fly to Clearwater as well. So, and it's a very distinct possibility this weekend, Gus. If you know we don't do what we need to do here, because right now Tulane's in the seventh spot. If we don't do what we need to do this weekend, we very well could play Houston on Tuesday night here in Clearwater. So Tulane's got to take care of some business. Really, again, right now, Gus, you want to be playing your best baseball heading into the tournament. And like I've said a lot recently, we've seen flashes. We've seen flashes of really, really good baseball, but it just has not been consistent. It's been up and down and up and down, and it continued to be that way last weekend. We played two unbelievable ball games against Memphis. And then on Sunday, weren't able to complete the sweep. We left 12 runners on base and lost 3-2. Oof. Then in Lafayette, on Tuesday night, we get down 6-0 in the first 4.5 innings, battle back big time, and made it 7-6 and had nobody out in the ninth inning and a chance to tie the game up, and just fell a little bit short. So, again, we see it in spurts, Gus. It's just not been consistent enough.
Two quick final questions. The last one on the game tonight. The UCF, what can you tell us about the Knights, and how difficult is this series going to be?
Well, it is going to be tough because they're really good at home, Gus. I mean, they are 24-9 at home. They're 11-10 in the league, which isn't that great. They're just actually a couple of spots ahead of us. We could actually catch them and pass them if we have a good weekend here in Orlando. Their hitting numbers aren't really better than Tulane's. Their average is just a few points higher. We've got more home runs as a team. We fielded better than UCF does, but they can pitch, Gus. Their ERA is 2 full points. Actually, it's 2.5 points lower than ours. They're giving up runs at a 3.19 clip, and that is really, really good. If you're giving up 3 runs a game, you're going to win a lot, and that's what Tulane's got ahead of them this weekend. I'm curious to see how the wind's going to be blowing in this ballpark, which historically has been a launching pad, Gus, but again, the way the weather is here and the way the conditions are going to be, it's going to be very hot, humid, and the air is going to be heavy. We'll see how the ball is going to carry. But, it's a natural surface with a very, very soaked outfield. So, And it's really not going to get a whole lot better the whole weekend. We're basically just going to have to dodge thunderstorms for the next 3 days.
Well, there you have it, and as always, I have to leave you with...
I got my golf in, though, Gus.
Yeah, you did get your golf in, so that's good, but I always enjoy asking you the important questions, Todd, such as mock drafts, fantasy football, and the following. Oh. How big a deal is it that Boogie Cousins unfollowed the Pelicans on Instagram?
My God. Are you serious?
There it is.
Can I just hang up? Hang up. Hang up. You can hang up on me.
I mean, if you unfollow Tulane, is that a big deal? That's why I'm just asking. If you just happen to unfollow Green Wave Athletics.
Somebody would make it a big deal. It's not, but somebody would.
There he goes.
Have a great day, Gus. I have.
There he goes at NT Graphs, the way to follow him on Twitter. Todd Graffanini. Head coach Kenny Farrell, the first place jesters. See what I just did there? I mean, you're technically our first place. Yeah.
What you expect?
We'll talk a little football when we come back. It's the sport. NolaJesters.com is the way to go online. You can check out all the information on the team as well as head coach Kenny Farrell joins us each and every Thursday right here. In studio. This is the song you chose. You wanted a little Robbie Williams, Let Me Entertain You. This is what you want right now. Say that again.
There you go. I said, that's what we're trying to do.
You'll eventually learn to turn your mic on. There you go. Coach, congratulations. You got the season off to the right start, getting a win on Saturday. A little more like it. We were last here last Thursday. I asked you if it was difficult that, you know, the Open Cup, playing your first game with something of that significance. It just kind of looked like it just, I don't know. One game was a struggle in the penalty kicks, and the other one you guys went 4-0. You get what I'm getting at?
We didn't execute. I mean, we really should have won the U.S. Open Cup game, and it went to a penalty shootout. You can't control it, but you got to move on. I mean, that you can't control what's behind you. You can only control what's in front of you, and just take lessons from what's happened. You know,
the aerial force was the win that we were talking about back last Saturday. 4-0 in the win there, and I just seeing a lot of the highlights and things of that nature from that game. Just good passing, good ball movement. Yeah. They just spacing something really stood out to me.
Yeah, the first half was really exciting. They started to put together what I think they can. I think they're going to get better going through the season. Emerald Force really didn't really didn't get a chance to get into the game. We were 4-0 up at halftime. Really good goals from play. One from a set piece, but the other three from play. And they were good goals. There was nothing lucky about them. Well created. Plenty of players involved in the creation of the goals. And then the finishes were good. We actually missed another penalty in the first half, which I couldn't believe. We were 1-0 up and we got a penalty.
Right.
And struck it against the post. And I said, oh, here we go again. So no, but it ended up being 4-0, played out the second half. It had been the third game in 8 days. The middle of the week game went to 120 minutes. So I kind of knew we would fade towards the end. Obviously we've had a week off this week to get ready for Saturday's game. So I was glad we were up in the first half and in complete control.
It's funny you mention that because next week, I mean, obviously now you got Greenville coming up and then Nashville, Chattanooga, kind of really in a small period, you know, time that we do it. So you're going to have a couple of games here in a row.
No, it's very tough. I mean, we don't look past Greenville.
Right.
We need to put a win away. But these players, a lot of these players that played with me last year, they understand what these road trips are like. You know, it's like a 5-day road trip and it's a day off in between games, a lot of traveling, a lot of preparation. And hopefully you come away with the right results. We were unbeaten last year. We had 8 games on the road that I think we won 4 and tied 4. I mean, I'd be really happy if we could have that record again this year.
So you're mentioning that's why you have to put a win away against Greenville. Like, does that make Saturday's game even that more important considering you're in Nashville one day, a day off, and then boom, you're playing Chattanooga, who happens to be a pretty good rival.
Yeah, look, you're right. If you don't win against Greenville, and they're a very good side. I've seen them play. I've watched their tapes. 4 or 5 extremely dangerous players, more so than Knoxville had last weekend. But, you know, you need to win your home games. You're expected to win your home games. You've got to go and win your home games. You've got to prepare your team to be ready to win home games. And when you go on the road, you take as much as you possibly can. And you bring it back and hopefully position yourself to win the division of the league. But if we were to lose against Greenville on Saturday, yeah, that would apply huge pressure to try and make that up on the road. So, it's a pressure game. It needs to be won. And if we don't get the result that we want, yeah, they'll feel extra pressure going into the next game, and we'll have to manage that.
What do you think you have some of the advantages in this game Saturday?
Some of the advantages to us? I think ball possession, the quickness of the movement of the ball, the technical ability of the players, plus we've, you know, just brought in some new players that I knew were hanging out there, that I knew were coming. And so the squad's going to be deep. There might be one or two changes. We're a week away from having one player back from injury. He had a broken jaw, and he's back next. It's getting stronger as we go along. I think for us it'll be the movement of the ball, you know, playing on the front foot, creating opportunities by splitting defenders and getting players in. That's really what we've got to do. We've got to go out from the start and do exactly what we did against Knoxville.
Speak with head coach Kenny Farrell. We'll do so on Thursdays here in the segment. We make it a soccer segment as well. We'll get into some other topics. Every Tuesday, though, it is the Kenny Farrell Coaches Show, 6 to 7 o'clock over there at Finn McCool's. They support the Jesters pretty good, huh?
Yeah, no, they're great. They're great. I mean, they're the soccer pub in town for the most part that people know. I mean, there's a few out there, but they're probably the flagship soccer pub in the city.
Nice. I promise I will be there on Tuesday.
I'll believe it when I see it.
You text me like you're coming out to the show, and I'm knee deep and feeding the kid. It's just that time
frame. To be fair, we're doing a really good job without you. So, you know.
Well, maybe you don't need me there. That's exactly what it is. There he is. He just referenced the old Gato Negro curse.
But you better be there Saturday night. That's what I want. Yeah. It's a Saturday night.
Well, I love the 7 p.m. Kickoff because obviously with this heat that we've been having, the nighttime kickoffs are a lot better than the daytime.
Yeah, it has been hot.
So,
that's for sure.
No doubt. Hey, I want to ask you about this. It's an interesting story that came out. Jurgen Klinsmann, remember, used to be the coach of the national team here for the U.S., said he would have quit if he knew he'd be fired for 2 losses on that season.
Yeah.
Is that interesting to hear him say he would have just not gone through it in the process there? It kind of comes across to me as somebody that feels, was it really never given a shot? Or it just kind of like, y'all just wanted me out regardless?
Look, he was still well in control of getting the team to the World Cup. He was taking some pressure from players that had been left out, like Landon Donovan, of the team that went to the World Cup previously. But he was, I thought he was unduly fired, to be honest with you. I think he should have been given the next game. And I don't know what context he said that in, or how the question was asked. But if he was going in and he say, look, you lose 2 games, you're fired. I mean, probably, you know, he probably knew that there's a possibility of losing 2 games, but he was always going to get to the World Cup. And also, he has to try new players and he has to put new players in and things can go wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, Bruce Arena, who took over, went out because a goal that was not scored in Panama that hit the post was given as a goal. And while they were losing to Trinidad and Tobago, the referee makes a mistake, right, and Bruce Arena's out. So there's a game he shouldn't have lost. Okay, so yeah. Now look, I don't know if I would have come out and said that, but he might have felt it. You know, you got to give me the ropes to go all the way through and take it all the way.
It goes to the point that you've been talking about for a while now, though, that it U.S. soccer shouldn't be in the position where you're just trying to get in and you're depending on other games. That, well, you didn't have loftier expectations and goals you need to try to beat a higher level.
Yeah, the problem with the national teams right now is not the national teams. It's U.S. soccer. That is the problem. They have taken the focus of developing players, and they're focused on the business side of the game and lining pockets. And I don't mind saying that because I know this in and out. I'm on boards all over the country for soccer at high levels, and I see this stuff, and I'm just totally disgusted by it. Their job is to foster the growth of the game and develop world-class players and put national teams together, no more than that. And they're not really focused on that. They're focused on the business of the game and the money side of the game.
Well, it's funny. You've always said one of the easiest ways you can understand and see that is you've said, and it's interesting because we don't think about it because we're so used to it. It's how we grew up. Our professional teams are franchises.
Yeah.
And where you say, well, over in Europe and across the world, football clubs are part of their community. You have Metairie taking on, Biloxi. Yeah. But the people that play there are from there, so you have attachments, emotional, and things of that nature. We saw the rioting in one of the teams that just got relegated. It's off the top of my head.
Hamburg.
Yes. And they went nuts because that was happening because it meant something.
They take on, that's them. They own that team. Even though they don't own it, it's there. They live for it.
But that kind of gives you an idea because you're right. The MLS teams, it's a franchise. Here's your franchise. So, you can move it because we just had one, right? Somebody moved from Columbus.
That's I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Over here, we just move the team, right? So everybody moves, and all your investment, your emotion, your passion for the team, the money you've spent, the T-shirts and the scarves and the caps that you've bought for your child and everything else. Some business owner says, sorry, I'm out of here. I'm going to move to San Antonio. See you later. Could you imagine if they tried to take the Hamburg team out of Hamburg and move it somewhere after what you saw when they got relegated?
We've had some NFL guys. I want to say the guy that owns the Bucks, right? Tampa Bay Buccaneers owns Man U.
Yeah.
And
Glazier.
People went nuts when a non-European person buys a team or whatever because that's their concern.
Right.
That happens. And isn't it written, though? You can't do it. Like, he can't just move Man U.
Well, I mean, Man U, there's no way he could move it. It's probably the most followed team in the world. But if you don't have owners from your hometown, I don't think the thing's ever going to grow. I don't care what sport.
Right.
You've got to have owners from your hometown, or people can just up and leave and walk away and leave it behind them, or move the team. You've got to have owners from the hometown for these things to work. And I think that's important to remember. Now, if you're at the level of Manchester United, it's never going anywhere.
Right.
It's never going anywhere.
It's just
even though Glazier,
the Panthers just got sold for
Glazier actually lives in New Orleans. I don't know if you know that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But
because it's just interesting because the Panthers just got sold for $2.2 billion, it's a minority owner from the Steelers who's going to move over there. There's no real attachment there. It's just I have the money. I get to own it now. And so it's always interesting when you bring that up. Here's the quote that Klinsmann told Sports Illustrated: "You build a." He says the team was on track. We would have swallowed the early defeats because he lost those two in CONCACAF and he got out.
Yep.
And we could have moved on and got the job done. He says, you build a new skeleton between World Cups, and we hadn't built that skeleton yet. When we lost two games, we're still building the skeleton. Sorry we lost two games! Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
Then the U.S. Federation became emotional, but they made their decision, so no problem. If I'd have known that they made the decision to cut me short because I lost two games, probably would have stepped out after 2014.
Yeah. No, look, I'm with him on that. I don't know about, not taking the game on if he had an owner. I won't read into that. But what I will say is that what he's talking about building and putting the pieces together, he would have taken – I believe they would have been in the World Cup if Klinsmann had been kept. What happened was the old boys club in the United States got together, and Bruce Arena got back in and brought his people back in. And by the way, even though we had a change at U.S. soccer, we still have Sarakin, who is his assistant and his buddy for a long time, still running the team. And we were promised that there'd be a change.
Don't we have shouldn't we have a coach by now?
Well, do you think
The general manager that's going to hire the
He's too busy trying to, the new president's too
I'm
busy.
I'm just saying, I don't know.
Too busy trying to keep the World Cup here.
How dangerous is that? That's something I wanted to talk to you about because we went a few weeks where we didn't chat because there's been a lot of back and forth. I know Trump tweeted something and you had, Black come out and just say, aha, that's not collusion, but I mean, just, that's tampering or mess. Is the U.S. going to get a World Cup or not?
I think it's 50-50,
wow.
Honestly. I think
what people, it higher than that when we first started chatting a couple months back?
It was probably about 95%.
Wow.
Before the election.
That's
before,
a huge.
So what they, more people look, more people that are invested in soccer look at what happened, what they're starting to realize is happening in this country from outside this country than the people inside the country.
Okay.
So whereas people are just learning, when we went through that election in February where Sunil Gulati had to step down and his vice president won the election, what it did was all the campaigns started to expose all the problems with U.S. soccer from the top. And there's a lot of trust that's not there anymore. So we've got one country competing for the 2026 World Cup, one country, and that's Morocco. And right now to say it's 50-50 between the United States and Morocco is absolutely ridiculous, but it is. And it may not come to the U.S. in 2026, which will be terrible for the U.S. because that's our opportunity to grow the sport and, you know, do fantastic things here with the game of soccer. But it's really up there 50-50. And remember, every single country, no matter what size it is, gets a single vote. And the U.S. has not been doing themselves any favors because of what has gone on at the top between Major League Soccer, U.S. Soccer. No, won't even listen to promotion relegation, no support for the lower level teams, no interest, and it's all been exposed. And it doesn't matter what the Americans think, and it doesn't matter what, you know,
right.
It matters what everybody else outside that has a vote thinks, and they don't care right now. They're in two minds. I mean, they will make a lot of money, obviously, if it's in the U.S., but I think there's only a 50-50 chance right now.
That's disheartening because, as you mentioned, if it was 90, now it's down to 50, you're trending in the wrong direction.
Well, we need a new. Really, I would love to see a new board get in charge, something fresh, because it's so tainted. It's so tainted at the top, and it's just getting exposed. I just think we need to change it over.
We're going to be talking over the next couple of weeks, not only on your show on Tuesdays, but in our segments on Thursdays. We're getting closer, Coach, to the World Cup. We're inside of a month, aren't we?
Yes. Well, I think we're
about a month. 30, a month away.
30 days.
Yeah, something like that. 30, yeah. 32 days, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. It's just interesting because on the main soccer page on ESPN is a picture of Messi inside the world. Most private superstar. And one of the storylines, obviously, we will get into and discuss once we get closer is, you know, you have the two greatest superstars in the sport. I mean, it's not even close, right? Ronaldo and Messi.
Gus and Kenny.
Yeah, Gus and Kenny, exactly.
Saturday nights.
But Portugal and Argentina haven't won the World Cup.
They haven't won it recently.
You know, no, I'm talking about with them.
With them on
the team. And mm-hmm. You just wonder when that pressure. I mean, he quit the national team. Remember after the last couple, he said he wasn't going to do it. He's back on it. How important is to get that win for Messi?
No, it's really important because
is it more than Ronaldo or equally?
Well,
for both?
Neither one of them have won the World
Cup.
That's
what I'm saying.
So if you're the greatest player and the time is running out, so they're still great players, but there's only, you know, a certain limited amount of time you can play. To have that World Cup championship with your national team by the time you're retired is huge. It's absolutely huge. So, you know, both of them will be looking to win it, whether it's Portugal or Argentina.
And the interesting aspect of it is, I remember during the qualifying, both of those teams barely almost made it in, right?
Yeah, but just think about this. I mean, how phenomenal is Drew Brees? I mean, how phenomenal is that guy? Can you imagine if his career was winding down and he had never won the Super Bowl?
That's a very good point.
It would have been horrible. And the guy's just, it would have been a disgrace.
Having a Super Bowl and being a Super Bowl MVP.
It would have been a disgrace.
But he did win it.
He did win it. Yeah. So but if he didn't win it, it'd always be he was great, but he never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. We hear it all the time with Dan Marino.
That's right.
Yeah. All the time. And you're right. He's not ever really kind of talked about it. Brady, well, he won six. You know, I mean, Montana, he won four. I mean,
I mean, that's the kind of analogy. I mean, the Super Bowl is not as big as the World Cup, but still, it's the analogy works.
Interesting. Look at you. What time we kick it off on Saturday?
7 p.m. Is that for the penalty shootout or is that for?
Why? Do you want me there? You got to tell me which Saturday you want me out there.
We'll see. We might organize it for this Saturday. You never know.
Just let me know.
Okay.
Greenville, 7 o'clock. It's the Jesters over there at Pan American Stadium. Go check out Coach Kenny Farrell and his New Orleans Jesters. NOLAJesters.com on the website and NOLAJesters on Twitter. Thank you, Coach.
Cheers.
Yep. And on Tuesdays, the Head Coach Kenny Farrell Show right here on ESPN New Orleans each and every Tuesday from 6 to 7. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. Hour 3, about to get in the books. Matt Muscoden after further review on deck. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to ESPN New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking about how our intern and Pepper Brooks, the color analyst for the movie Dodgeball Coach, kind of have similar hairstyles, and you referenced it. It's different. It's almost like hair from a sunroof / bed hair.
Hair from outer space.
Yeah, right. I mean, it is interesting.
I honestly have never seen anything like that.
Brian Johnson says, you guys spent the entire segment making dodgeball references and mocking my hair. When did we talk baseball? We actually did. We did.
He had me worried there for
a second.
And
then he took a shot at the intern and says, your intern doesn't have a shot. Doomed. Run, kid. Get out of there. See? There you go.
Sick of this, Gus. I'm not appreciated around here.
You know what I think, Coach?
Oh, no, you are, because it's
I was going to say, Coach, with the level of disrespect I have to deal with, you know, we're looking for me to go play goal, and you're going to have 5 penalty kicks, and you know, you think I'm going to get injured. I'm going to stop at least one, but maybe he should be goalie, and I should take a shot.
We couldn't get the ball past his hair, that's for sure.
That is very true. That's a good foot.
Yeah, that is a good foot above his head.
Very true.
One of the things I was talking about during the break, too, was kind of fun, and we can kind of tie in. One of the things that we love to do during March Madness is make picks and segments. Maybe we'll do something like that for the World Cup. We've been noticing some major, major chain restaurants are going to be doing some of that, because I think it's getting bigger. Look, I guess what I'm trying to get at is this. It stinks the U.S. isn't in it.
Yep.
It's still going to be very watched.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the World Cup is still going to be watched here in this country. You still have a lot of people in it. But we're going to have to pick teams. Obviously, never mind.
Yeah, Ireland didn't make it.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like that. I was just, we're going to have to pick teams.
No, you did.
No,
you did.
Well, Ireland did, and, you know, we didn't either. So we're in the same boat. We got to pick a team. I see a lot of people that don't have teams going with Iceland.
Yeah. Well, they ain't going to win it, I can tell you.
So, wait, you're going with the winner? Or are you going with somebody that can win? Or are you going with somebody that you just want to see do well?
I haven't landed anywhere yet, but maybe by this time next week.
But we'll do that. Yeah, no, we'll do that. We got a month here to start picking some teams as to where to go. Jordan, the intern. We're going to be picking, maybe narrow down to 5 countries that, you know, why not see if we can root for them and see what they can do. We'll see. We'll have some fun. I mean, I'm Spanish-Italian. I got Italy and Spain.
Well, Spain are in it. Italy didn't make it, which is unbelievable.
No, they sacked their guy, didn't they? Immediately.
Oh, they got rid of everybody. The federation, everybody, the board, they cleaned house. They got everybody out.
they got rid of everybody.
That's what the U.S. should have done.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, get more of this on Tuesday is the Coach Kenny Farrell Show. Matt Muscoda, after further review, is coming up. Thanks to Chris Blair, Matt Reiser, Brian Johnson, Joe Christofek, Kenny Farrell, Manny Pepis, and not Jordan the intern.
Wow.
We'll see you tomorrow at Deuce McAllister's Old Saint Kitchen
and Tap
on ESPN New Orleans.